Hi, I'm Sean Eli here with another episode of Coffee in the Clouds with Comedians with my co-host Tom Capone. We also have Al Martin, owner of two New York City comedy clubs, and fellow comedian Talia Reese. And I'm going to introduce them with a little bit more detail. But Tom, I got a question for you. Other than the fact that obviously you know that the color of the day is blue, why are you here?
Well, two things. I just had my wife give me a dollar because I told her a knock-knock joke, so I'm now officially pro, okay? But the other thing, we are becoming the king of the Zoom shows. We are becoming the king of all Zoom events. I run the Distance Learning Association, and we're like the number one reseller for Zoom. So Zoom shows are becoming a thing. So it's kind of like, you know, here we are. We're trying to take over the world with Zoom via comedy. So that's my story.
I guess you're Dr. Zoom then.
I'm Dr. Zoom.
Okay, well, let me introduce the others. Al Martin owns two comedy clubs right now, Broadway Comedy Club and Greenwich Village Comedy Club, both in New York. And I think both of which, actually, I know both of which Talia and I have both worked at, both together and separately. And Talia Reese is a comedian, a lawyer escapee, unless you have a better term for that. And Talia, why don't we start with you? I should also say Al is an author. He wrote a book on, Al, you got the book to hold up?
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact.
I thought you might have.
Do I have it right, or is it upside down? Or there I am.
I think. Well, you have a microphone in your head.
Well, it's called I Did It on a Dare, How I Built a Comedy Empire in 30 Short Years. If I could ever figure out how to get this thing out there.
Comedy empire, not a technology empire.
No, a comedy empire, yeah, in just 30 short years.
Quick.
Yeah, and now COVID will destroy it in four months.
No, Al, don't say it.
No, this is a happy podcast. We don't talk about epidemics or pandemics or.
Oh, okay.
But Talia, you were a lawyer. How did you end up becoming a comedian and unlawyering yourself?
You know, it's funny. People always ask me that. But what I had a life before I was a lawyer, and that life heavily involved comedy. So really, it was a return to comedy after law for me.
What was the life with comedy?
Oh, gosh. I mean, just, you know, middle school, high school. I was always, you know, whenever there were high school comedies, I always had a leading role. And then in college, I was the director of a comedy troupe. And then after college, I did some comedy work. And then, you know, having Jewish parents really pressuring me, I said, kind of like Al, open up a comedy club on a dare. So I took the LSATs on a dare. Not the same thing, but basically like, all right, if I do well enough to get into a middle tier school in New York City, that's the only way I'll go to law school. And then I did. And then, so I said, all right, 3 years, I'll do this. And then they just suck you in. They just suck you in with the money. And then after a while you realize, okay, my life, it can't just be about this money. And so I decided to be a poor comedian.
Right. You had too much money to give it away.
I had too much money already. I said, this is boring. Let me see what it's like to struggle again.
Well, why don't we gang up on Al and ask him why he doesn't pay us more?
Well, you know, in my book, I talk about some golden rules of comedy. And Talia really kind of fits one of them. You know, I find, and Sean, you probably fit it as well, the people that have the toughest time succeeding in comedy are those who have a successful day job. You know, when you're kind of just sitting in your parents' basement and you're not making any money anyway and nothing's going on and you're eating dollar pizza, it's very easy to make that commitment to stand-up comedy because you have nothing else going on. But when you're successful in your day job and you get used to, like you say, you got sucked in, when you're used to a certain lifestyle, all of a sudden to sort of give that up to be at some comedy club till 2 o'clock in the morning to maybe get 5 minutes, you know, becomes much more difficult. And really, the person that has a successful day job has it so much tougher to try to make that commitment. So,
well, Well, I would say the tougher part is telling your parents, hey, I'm giving up the day job to get 5 minutes at 2 o'clock in the morning at the comedy club.
Right.
Well, that was the thing. So it was no longer answering to my parents. It was answering to my husband, and he was okay with it.
Wow.
I'm always answering to someone. That's part of the problem.
Well, that's a whole other show, right?
Well, obviously Al answers to his wife because it's got his wife's name on the bottom of the screen.
That's true. I to this day, I still don't understand why I can't. Her only explanation is nobody else has done it, so very few people have done it, so we're different. I said, all right, no problem.
Well, Al, I would say that I would take the opposite track in terms of the difficulties in comedy if you have a day job, successful day job, because what I've discovered is the people who live in their parents' basement don't have anything to talk about. It's the people with who are out and about and have jobs, and maybe they started in comedy not when they were 22, but when they were 32 or 42, have a base of life experiences they can make jokes about. Otherwise, it's just the same, pot-smoking Tinder jokes that you hear over and over.
Oh, I agree. I agree. So it's sort of a weird thing. The ones that have more to talk about because they have a day job are the ones that feel most uncomfortable sometimes leaving that day job and then going on to really go through the grind, because as you well know, stand-up is a very humbling profession. I've had celebrities with a ton of money who want to become stand-up comics. They hire writers, they hire this, they hire that. Yeah. At the end of the day, you can't hire being in front of an audience doing your jokes and seeing whether they work or not.
Well, you
so
also
true.
You can't outsource 10 years of experience. You can hire writers, but you got to be on stage night after night getting better. I mean, the same way if you're a baseball player, if you're 30 years old and you decide you want to learn to play baseball, you can hire a batting coach, you can hire a fielding coach, but you still got to be in there hitting balls over and over and over again until you get good at it, and that doesn't happen overnight.
Exactly.
And to that point, I'm very grateful to Al's Clubs and to Dustin in particular. I mean, I had so much experience really working almost every night at one point, emceeing shows at Greenwich Village Comedy Club, one of Al's Clubs. I think emceeing is really the best way to become an experienced, proper comedian who's comfortable on stage. You could have your jokes. You could have tried them out. You have the timing. You know they work. But really just being up there and having to react and warm up crowds and come back, maybe even after you didn't close strong or maybe you did close strong and now it's like, oh, but I have to bring them back again. Just that whole experience of emceeing lots and lots of shows, that I feel, and maybe Sean, maybe you agree with that, I feel that gives you the confidence, like I can take any room, I've seen it all.
Well, yeah, being the opener, being the first person on stage to an audience that isn't ready for the dynamic of shut up and listen and just laugh because this person's in charge, that's a harder skill.
Yeah, you set the tone.
Yeah. Al, you were a comedian and then you stopped to go into the business side of it. Why did you do that?
Well, I ran into that conflict. What kind of lifestyle did I want to have? And, where were my encumbrances, if you want to call that word, a child in encumbrance, but in other words, I hope she's not listening. I hope they're not listening. But, the thing is that at the time, Dina was only 5 or 6 years old, and I was looking at the big range of everything, and I'm saying, I was a pretty good comic. I was a good club comic. I could, locally do it, but I don't think I was heading for a sitcom, at least at the time I didn't. And I said, what's my better opportunity? To own a club where I can get up on stage anyway if I really want to do it, or business? And since business was always a passion of mine anyway, I was able to combine two passions. And but after a while, it became very difficult to concentrate on stage when you're running a business, because I'm trying to tell jokes and I'm noticing three tables without their drinks. And all of a sudden, I'm getting conflicted on stage. Am I the club owner trying to get a waiter or a waitress over? Or am I the comedian trying to make the audience laugh? So,
So the rest of us all have jokes about why isn't this table getting their drinks. I don't know why you didn't have them.
Yeah, I should have actually developed that. But it all happened so quick, really, And The next thing I knew, I was just running the club. But I still get up once in a while. That's the weird thing. It's like if an audience strikes me and hits me away, I'll come over to the MC and I'll say, let me go up there and do a few minutes.
Oh, I've never seen that.
Yeah, I have.
We almost did a show together, Al. I don't remember what happened. I think it turned out it was on a Jewish holiday and I couldn't do it. I was so excited.
Where?
We're doing a show with Al Martin at a country club on Long Island. This is going to be awesome.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, it happens. You know, I do get – every so often someone will get me at a moment where I'm a little weak and I'll say, okay, I'll do it, you know. And then 2 days before the gig, I go, what the hell did I get myself into? Now I got, you know, now I got to rehearse and I got to get up on stage. I got to walk through the set and, you know.
But I'm thinking if I were the club owner and I'm on stage and I'm noticing those things like you're noticing, yeah, as a comic, it's easy to kind of rip a little bit on the waitstaff. Hey, you know, this table doesn't have their drinks. What's going on? But I feel like if you're the owner and you're so invested in this, it's like it's hard to keep your sense of humor up there.
It's very hard because you're thinking,
like, Tony, where are you? You're fired.
Six people at $8 a drink, $50. This set's costing me $50 because I'm on stage.
Well, Al, so I should book you, but I'll only pay you what you pay us. Is that fair?
Okay, as long as I can sell my book. I did it out of there.
Well, yourself.
Can I buy that hat?
That's a microphone.
I love that. It's a good
look.
You like it? It's very Egyptian also. It's
yeah,
like,
it looks like a
what do you call
snake
that?
Is going to come out, right?
It'll go with my mask.
Yeah, it's a turban made of silver, I guess, your hat?
No, it's actually the head of a microphone.
No, but it looks like a turban made of
oh,
silver.
Oh, yeah, it looks like a – yeah, it actually does look like a turban. That's kind of why I went for it, but
– I like that. You need is the matching mask, and you're good to go.
Right. I'll work on that and stick in the Broadway logo somewhere, too. Promote.
Promote. Absolutely.
So, Tom, we've got a captive audience here. We can ask Al Martin anything we want, so – I want to ask Al, do the comedy club owners, is there a camaraderie or do you think of yourselves as competitors? Because for comedians, it's more camaraderie, but we are competing for opportunities.
Well, I do talk on a regular basis with a couple of the club owners. And obviously there are some that I don't necessarily get along with as well. I do speak to Tom. Huh?
Is it geographical, the ones you don't get along with because their clubs are close to yours?
No, you know, it's as you well know, I sold New York Comedy Club to Emilio and Scott. So we do talk quite a bit, trade notes. If anybody's being a pain in the ass, smart mouth, we kind of compare notes or, you know, we actually even got together on a couple of legal things to hire a lawyer on something. So we do get along. I talk a lot with Tony Bavacqua over at Dangerfields. We converse. And once in a while, you know, I've even spoken with Chris Mazzilli, who I've known for almost 30 years now. So
the owner of Gotham.
Yeah,
did he work for you at one point?
What's that?
He worked for you? Did he manage one of
yes,
your
Yes, Chris did work for me. From 1990 to about 95 or 96, for about 5 or 6 years, he was the manager at New York Comedy Club.
Oh, wow. And
he was also So who's the funniest club owner?
Me.
Who's the second funniest club owner?
Chris Mazzilli. He was pretty funny when he did stand-up comedy. So I would say him, and of course, out in New Jersey, Vinny Brand is very funny. So,
oh, yeah, he's very funny.
Yeah, there's a few of us out there.
And
I remember the first time I worked at the Stress Factory, I didn't know that was Vinnie Brand on stage hosting the show. I had heard the comedy club owner was also a comedian. This guy was like ripping the audience, like tons of local humor. Also, and I was like, okay, I know road comics often can like talk about the Jersey Turnpike or some. This guy's got like down to the grocery store on the next block. It's like, who is this guy crushing it? And yeah, that was Vinny Brand. He was very, very funny.
Very funny. You know, it's a sad thing in a way, because there is a little bit of prejudice against club owners who are comedians, because quite honestly, there are a lot of very bad ones, you know, that they're sort of hobbyists. They open a club so they can do a few minutes in the front of the show, and they really just screw up the whole thing. But, you know, for the serious ones like Vinny and myself, I found that, for me at least, there was a little uneasiness by other comedians, like, not sure, can he do the job, or is he just doing it because he owns a club, you know? And you know, you have to sort of prove yourself in a way that you are funny, and it makes you work a little harder.
That's probably true outside of New York, where they don't have the ability to get on stage a lot, and they don't realize, you know, what comedy's all about. Tom, you were about to ask a question.
Yeah, like, I just was curious, what experience, good or bad, have you guys had with Zoom shows or virtual shows or anything that's tried to offset the fact that you can't get into the clubs and you can't, you know? So I'd like to hear anything, good or bad. It wouldn't be terrible if you said some good stuff, though, because the CEO of Zoom is going to see this, okay? But here we go.
Talia, you first.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to answer that. And not pandering at all, but I've had all positive experiences doing Zoom shows, I have to say. I mean, the first time was a little bit awkward. Well, let me backtrack. So I do a lot of shows for private organizations, a lot of Jewish events, synagogues, because I have that, I have a background where I could do a lot of specific humor for those crowds. And then having done corporate events, and I enjoy writing new material for different companies or organizations. So when this first hit, a lot of places, like in March and April, I got a slew of Zoom shows because people panicked and they wanted to keep their organizations tuning in and get downloading Zoom and all that. So it was a little awkward in the beginning, but once I discovered, I get a second device and I keep that device on gallery view, so I can see 9 faces while I'm performing. I may not hear the laughter, but I can keep my sense of timing. And I have to say, I really think it feels like a night out. People, you know, I've gotten a lot of positive feedback. They feel like they bonded with their communities and had a night out. I think Zoom has been like the greatest thing to happen for this pandemic as far as keeping people united. I mean, I don't think anybody can really argue with that.
Right.
Well, if we didn't have the technology that we have now, if this were 20 years ago and all we had was, you know, telephone, 25 years ago, let's say, and all we had were telephones, this would be a lot more complicated. I've done a Zoom show here and there. I was against the idea originally because I didn't realize it was going to go on as long as it, you know, as it has been. But I was against the idea originally because it's not just the comedians who need to hear the audience. The audience needs to hear other people laughing in order to realize how much fun they're having. And it's, so I've said this before, the secret to comedy is 100 people in a room that holds 70. And Al will attest to that because he'll pack 500 people in a room that holds 4.
But don't forget, most people who tune in to watch a Zoom comedy show, they're not alone. They're sitting with 1 or 2 other people on their sofa. So they're laughing together, even though they can't hear everybody else laughing. I mean, it's not obviously ideal. It's certainly not the same thing.
We should tell them to watch in their closet or their bathroom or their car, because what you need is laughter to echo. And if you're in a big cavernous living room, and my living room, of course, is the size of a football field because I have that comedy money, you need to hear the laughter echoing. And if you have high ceilings and a lot of open space, you don't hear that. But I think what I've discovered the last couple of months is comedians, we're collegial and we speak to each other about this. And we're giving each other tips as to how to do a Zoom show better. For instance, to try to get the audience to set their volume, not on 0, not mute them, but set it to like 30%. So you can still hear laughter, but the dog barking doesn't come through.
Right, or they should wear headphones.
Yeah.
And keep their audio on.
And the other thing is to do what's known as crowd work, which is like when an MC starts a show and talks to the audience.
Yes.
You have a gallery view. You can talk, and I can say, oh, Talia, what a lovely painting, and just engage to have a conversation.
Yes. That's, it's actually really fun.
Al, are you doing anything with your clubs?
I had a couple of shows with Zoom early on in it. And at that time, I wasn't thrilled with the technology. There was a lot of people jumping on top of each other, interrupting each other. However, we have had a couple of shows that we are doing on Zoom at Broadway, and that is an improv show, and we're doing a dating show, which both of them fit the concept. And I'm always interested in adding podcasts to the lineup because I think Zoom is perfect for podcasts. Now, I have two questions, one for you and Talia and one for Tom, if I may.
Sure.
So for you and Talia, the question I have is, once the clubs reopen, well, if they ever reopen, will you pretty much be going back to clubs and this was sort of a band-aid in a way, the Zoom shows, or will you go do both if they're available, or what's your feeling on that? Will Zoom sort of for stand? I think Zoom is here to stay for a lot of other uses. Podcasts, I think they're great. Conferences, business meetings. But for stand-up, will it be pretty much back to the clubs? And or how do you guys look at that?
Sean, may I?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm hopeful there's going to be a vaccine this winter. That seems to be Fauci and Dr. Oz, who I've listened to. They seem to be touting vaccine. Assuming things are back to normal by spring, summer, yeah, I mean, I'm back to the clubs. However, that said, if there are still corporate retreats and places that over the next couple of years even are not, you know, having everybody meet at a central location, I'm happy doing Zoom shows. I'll go where the money is. I'll adapt. I'm an entertainer. Give me a medium. I'll work with it. But I mean, does anything truly replace having a live audience? No. But if people are still hiring comedians to do these types of shows, there is, I think that means, you know, the feedback is positive enough. There is enough of a psychic benefit with people that the Zoom is successful.
Well, Al, I see a hybrid because as an example with the Zoom show, I can post on social media, hey, I'm doing a Zoom show. Here's the URL, and people will tune in. And some of it is people in the neighborhood, and some of it is, you know, if somebody from South Africa, where I perform, but I'm not going back anytime soon, if they want to see my show, they're not flying to New York or Pittsburgh or wherever I'm performing to see a show, but they have the opportunity. Right. So I think what you're going to see is you're going to put on a show at one of your comedy clubs, and you're going to have 200 people in the audience, and you're going to have a camera in the back of the room. And for all the people outside of New York who can't be there, they're going to be able to, you know, instead of maybe paying $20, they'll pay $3 or $5, and they'll get to watch a comedy show live. I think what that's
right, but haven't we
the networks?
Haven't we had that technology for quite some time? I remember Rooftop Comedy approaching me, and we did it with them, where there was a camera in the room, and if they were interested in comedians, we would take the comedian's name down and get a release from them and pay them. You know, Rooftop Comedy was in charge of paying them. But in other words, this technology has existed. So am I going to be, and I don't mind this, it's a new revenue stream. Is the Broadway Comedy Club brand going to have two divisions? One, the live show, which you just mentioned, and then a second thing where, hey, people live in a certain small city, it doesn't even have to be South Africa, you can live in a small city in the United States that doesn't have a large population, large enough to support a comedy club, but they would love to see comics appearing in New York, and yeah, then we can do it via Zoom.
Yeah, I think what you were referring to before was Periscope, right? People,
yeah, actually, there were a couple of different live streaming type opportunities where people could,
but it didn't take off.
Were those live though, or those were recorded and played back? Because I think being part of a live experience is very different from even, let's say, I mean, for a few dollars a month, you can subscribe to Netflix or
well, we had the ability to do it live.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would very much love something like that. I think it doesn't take away from my local business. People still want to go out, especially I think once this is over and people are feeling comfortable, they're definitely going to want to go back and experience live comedy. But there are definitely pockets in the country itself, if not internationally, that are very interested in New York-style comedy, just like they're interested in a New York hot dog or a New York cheesecake, you know?
So perfectly, because essentially what you'll have is we've developed the technology now. I don't mean the Zoom technology so much as the mental technology for how to do a Zoom show, that I can see what would happen is you'd be doing a show, there'd be a camera in the back of Broadway Comedy Club. It would only be live. It wouldn't be like a Netflix special where the audience is watching just other people. And they're part of the show because there could be a laptop computer. Every comedy club has basically a mic in a mic stand and a stool on stage. And you could put a laptop computer on that stool and we could see some of the people watching it, you know, in other cities.
And the big difference is...
And talk to them.
Yeah. And the big difference will be once the live audience is back at the club. See, the only main objection I think a lot of people have to the Zoom is that you don't, it kind of screws with the timing a little bit because you don't always have the audience laughing. You don't have that feedback. It's like when I watch Jimmy Fallon now or any of the late night shows and they do a monologue or something similar to one, it's painful because I don't, I don't feel that laughter. But if we're doing the Zoom experience, coming from a live show at a New York comedy club, I think it could be potentially fantastic.
Well, there's a couple technologies that are coming now. And I mean, like within the last couple of weeks, we did a Q&A with Sarah Cooper. You know, she's now famous for doing the Trump voice. And it was great. And we charged $10 to attend. It was an hour with Sarah Cooper, Q&A, and there were a couple thousand people that attended, okay? We're doing an interview coming up with Steve and Nancy Carell, right? Now, they're not stand-up comics, but they're kind of comics, right? They're actors that do comedy, right? So that's kind of going to be interesting to see what happens. Patton Oswalt, you know, we're going to do a charity event with him where a portion of the revenue goes to one of our charities, et cetera. So I think it's all shaken out. Like we're all still figuring out, you know, what's going to really happen with the technology, but there is audience participation technology that's coming now where, you know, you could have thousands of people instead of sitting in the audience, like you would in a theater for the applause, you're literally home, but they know that you're going to be applauding. In other words, it's almost like having a Nielsen box at home. Like it's like, you are part of the audience. So, you know, we're expecting you to participate and clap and laugh or whatever. So you're going to see a couple things coming, you know, definitely over the next couple of weeks, but it's not going to go away. Cause even if the world goes back to normal, people are making money now and the CFOs are going to go, you know, that virtual event actually did pretty good.
Well, yeah, I've had shows that have had 300 sign-ins. So figure there were like 600-700 people there. And I never left my living room. You know, that's incredible. A show that I headlined that I wrote new material for. I mean, it's very exciting. It's very exciting. But I do think now everybody has Zoom. Everybody has it, the older, the younger people. Whereas with Periscope, you know, it had a cult following. People were doing live shows, they'd be broadcast from Twitter, but it wasn't enough. Because of this, everybody has the technology. So like you said, it's going to be so easy to, you know, to keep them going, to capitalize on it, to have, I picture that, a camera in the back of every club that also is live streaming for anybody who wants to pay to be part of the experience on Zoom.
Well, I think go ahead, I'm sorry.
Al, I would say the way I would see this is there's a camera in the back of the room and behind you in the backdrop of the Broadway Comedy Club. We're replacing that with the giant screen. And people who pay the few dollars to watch the show from home, their faces are going to be on that screen just like it's Zoom. And the MC can turn around and behind him is somebody's face and say, "Hey, Tony," and the same kind of conversation he would have with Tony in the front row, he can have with Tony in Topeka behind him. And oh, so really? The people watching at home feel like they're part of the show because they are technologically at the show.
You know, two thoughts come to me with this. One is we have to figure out the right price point for something like this. Right. Because, you know, remember, once you get a few people involved, the technical aspect, the club aspect, of course, the comedian has to get paid. Then what becomes the price point to the point where people just say, oh, I'd rather go to live entertainment or I'll just go to Netflix and down, you know, get the best of the best. Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, why am I watching so-and-so? So yeah. That's going to be very critical to figure out. And the second thing is, if it does get figured out, I think it could be an unbelievable thing. I have at Greenwich Village Comedy Club a 60-seat room only. But if suddenly I can sell 300 or 400 people at $5 each, $1,500, suddenly I don't, you know, I could book a much larger act than I ordinarily would, because not only do I have the live audience, but I'm making money on the, for lack of a better word, simulcasting or Zoom.
Yeah. Right. And it's great for the comedians because they can build a fan base outside of New York, but it's also really good for the audience because instead of watching a perfected show on Netflix, they're watching a live show with all the faults as well as the beauty of it, because they're part of the show. And if something goes wrong, it doesn't get edited out. There's, you know, if a waiter drops a tray of drinks and the comedian has to deal with the sound and the distraction, they're part of that. That would never end up in a Netflix yeah. special.
Well, we're coming up to the end of the hour, and this was fantastic. Another one of these, like, could have gone for a couple more hours, but just think what just happened this week where Hamilton, right? Broadway right. show in your living room, right? So how do you feel about that? If you were one of the ones that spent $1,000 or $2,000 for a ticket, and it's like, here it is in your living room. Well, not the same thing, but it's not the same thing, is it, right? So, so we don't know what the world, you know, is really going to deliver for us over the next, you know, several months or maybe even the next year. But pay-per-view boxing, right? That happened, right? You didn't have to.
Yeah, my only question is, this has been available for a few years already, and it still hasn't. It's been a hard sell in stand-up.
Well, look what the pandemic did for Zoom, right? Zoom was doing great, right? It was a $24 billion company this time last year. Now it's a $70 billion company, right? So the world happens, and, you know, we adapt. But, guys, this was a great session of Coffee in the Clouds with comedians.
Yes.
With comedians.
Thank you, Tom.
Take care, everybody.
Thank you for having me.
Bye, Sean. Bye. Thank you. Good to see you, Al.
Good to see you, Tom.